Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most dangerous comic book and pop culture podcast. Thank you for listening. We are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and with me as always, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. Suddenly things feel hot in my house. Usually I'm like freezing when we're recording this, and now I'm like sweating.
You know, I have been sitting here while we've been on Skype with each other thinking that same thing, and I realized it's because I changed my air conditioner filter earlier and never turned my air conditioner back on. So
there's your culprit right there. Despite the sweatiness that we're experiencing, we have a great show for everybody this week. A longtime friend of both of ours is going to be on the show. Carla Pacheco is going to be here to talk about Inspector Pancakes and Dreadful Sirens, and so many of the other things that she does for adults only. and it's going to be great to talk to her about that.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and tell you, it is a put-the-kids-to-bed situation.
We are earning our explicit tag this week.
We are, Carla is.
Okay, let's put all the blame on Carla. But it's true, she earned our explicit tag. But before we get to that, we've got checks, recs, and comics reviews. And also, we're going to thank some of our backers, some of our patrons, on Patreon. First up here, we've got Eamon Glenn.
Oh, thank you. I'm familiar with him. Thank you, Eamon. Or Eamon, perhaps.
It may be Eamon. If I got your name wrong, I apologize. Andrew Woodard.
Thank you, Andrew.
John McKeon.
Thank you, John.
Ian O'Toole.
Thank you, Ian.
One of our good friends, great friend of the show, L. Collins.
Oh, thank you so much. L has a great podcast called Into It that Matt and I have both been on. Definitely go check that out.
Yes, you should listen to that show. Andrew Norwood.
Thank you, Andrew.
Someone who is very fancy, from what I can tell, in a great way, Jack Murphy III.
Oh, thank you, Jack.
I assume everyone who is at the third.
Excuse me, I meant to say thank you, sir.
Yeah. Jeremy Hickman.
Oh, thank you, Jeremy.
Thomas Pollock.
Thank you, Thomas.
Kevin L.C.
Thank you, Kevin.
John Kinsey.
Thank you, John.
Ethan Stoops.
Thanks, Ethan. We appreciate it.
Travis Barnes.
Thanks, Travis.
Jordan Bloom.
Thank you, Jordan.
Aleph Craven.
Thank you, Aleph.
Matt Jameson. That's my name.
That's your name. Thank you, Matt.
Liam Shepard.
Thank you, Liam.
Robert Rowan.
Robert, thank you very much.
Hunter Scholey.
Hunter?
Hunter.
Thank you, Hunter.
And Andrew Kehoe.
Thank you, Andrew.
Those are the names of our patrons from this week. We thank them all, and we appreciate them all. If we met you in person, we'd give you a hug.
That is true.
Or a firm handshake, whichever you prefer.
If you want a hug, it's me. If you want a firm handshake, it's Matt.
That's pretty much how that works.
Yeah. I think you can break us down into those two categories pretty easily.
I am literally a porcupine. All right. Thanks again to all our patrons. Chris,
very fast hedgehog, Matt.
It's now time for us to do some checks and recs, so let's do that. So come on and take any checks before you wreck yourself. What are we checking in with this week, Chris?
I got some good news, Matt.
Okay.
Got some real good news. I might be immortal.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because here's what happened. I went to the store, and I bought some cookies. And this was on Sunday.
All right.
And then yesterday, so Wednesday, I saw these cookies sitting on my counter after I had gone to the gym, and I was like, let's eat one of these cookies. So I picked it up, started eating it, and I was like, man, this is really doughy. This is, like, really soft. It's good. It tastes real good, but it's really soft. And that is when I looked down at the label and saw they were take-and-bake cookies. So they were uncooked cookies that had been sitting on my counter for 3 days. And I immediately went into a panic. I immediately thought, oh my God, I am going, because you are aware, I will get food poisoned at the drop of a hat.
I that is something I do know about you, yes.
So I was terrified. I was worried. I was on the phone with a friend of ours, and I was like, should I like make myself throw up? What do I need to do? And then I looked at the label again, and I had actually bought vegan cookies. So there was nothing in there to go bad. Like they were, it was all just wheat and sugar and flour. So but I learned a lesson about just picking something up off the counter and putting it in my mouth and going, oh, this is very doughy.
Yeah, those warning signs, I think, are there for a reason.
Yeah.
And you should listen to them.
Yeah. So I did not get sick, which was nice. So I think that's a sign that maybe the iron stomach has kicked in. Maybe now I can just do whatever. Which is what I would be saying if I had not made macaroni and cheese, like a frozen macaroni and cheese that was just too spicy for me to finish tonight.
If anything, the reverse is happening to me. I definitely used to have the ability to eat anything and be fine. And now, like, my stomach will react badly to everything. You get over 30, and these things happen. These are the things that begin.
In the words of my mom, 30 hits like an MF.
That's true. 100%.
Matt, what are you up to this week? What have you been doing?
I guess now is as good a time as any to say that last week, if you follow me on Instagram or Twitter, you may have seen that I tweeted a photo of a box full of single-issue copies of Copernicus Jones number 1. But I ordered a bunch of those and got them last week, and I have those to take to conventions. I also ordered a huge box of supervillain handbooks and supervillain field manuals, and I will have those at the conventions that are going to be coming up in the next few months. The closest one is April 11th in Chris's hometown of Sumter, South Carolina. And that show is called what, Chris? The Comics Art Symposium?
The Comic Art Symposium, yes.
Yeah. So I'll be at that. Chris and Chad will be at that. I think there are a lot of other very cool guests that are going to be there. Tim Seeley, I think, is going to be there, among others. It's a one-day show, but I'll be there with Copernicus Jones copies and Supervillain handbooks and everything else. And Chris, you'll be there with tons of stuff with Chad.
Then I'm just bringing Chad.
Yeah, just Chad. So I'll be at that, and I'll be talking about the other shows I'll be at later as things come up. But I just to say right now, I'll be at the Memphis Comics Expo in June, and then Chris, obviously, you and I will be at Heroes Con because we're there every year. This year, I am actually tabling at Heroes Con, which is something I've only done one other time. I'll be sitting next to Caleb Gulner, and I think that'll be a lot of fun. But I'm looking forward to like several cons this year as somebody at a table, which is something I have not done a lot of in the past. Mostly I attend cons either as just like an attendee or as somebody working with the press. I think I've only tabled at a con like two or three other times. So this year I'm kind of taking off with some other stuff. And if you have any interest, if you are a person with a convention, you have any interest in the Copernicus Jones guy, the supervillain handbook guy, sitting around at a table for a while at your convention, I would love to go to more. This year I've got like weird scheduling stuff all year long, but I would love to go to more cons. and meet more War Rocket Ajax fans and more people and all kinds of other stuff. I'm actually super excited about conventions this year, partially because we're not going to Comic-Con, which is a huge
relief. That's very exciting.
Yes. All right, let's make some recommendations. Chris, what do you have to recommend?
Well, Matt, as you know, I currently have quite a bit of free time.
Yes.
And I'm trying to avoid spending a whole lot of money. And my recommendation this week fits both of those categories. It is called Pokemon Shuffle. And it is available for free for the Nintendo 3DS on the 3DS eShop. And it is diabolical. Now, Matt, you and I and our listeners know this. We like the Marvel Puzzle Quest a lot.
That is very true, yes.
If you are a Movie Fighters listener, then you know that we love Marvel Puzzle Quest much more than the movies that we watch on that show. Pokemon Shuffle is a game that it's a very similar setup. It's a match three game, with the kind of difference being that you can move any tile on the board. But as a result, they limit you to how many moves you have per game. So it's usually like around 10 or 15. And you have to do enough damage to the enemy Pokemon to knock it out in that certain number of moves. And it's really fun because after you beat a certain Pokemon, you can catch it and then add it to your team. And they each have different abilities and they each, you know, they have the type differences that make them more effective against each other. There are some that can mega evolve if you get enough matches during each game. So there's a lot to it. It's really neat. The diabolical part is that it limits the amount of times you can play the game. You have 5 hearts, so you can play the game 5 times. And then you just have to wait a half an hour to get another game back. Or you can spend a jewel in order to get, like, your 5 games back. Now, Matt, it will not surprise you to learn that you can go into the 3DS eShop and purchase more jewels with actual human money.
I mean, that's not all that different from the Marvel Puzzle Quest tactic of having to take, like, 2 hours for your heroes to recover before you can be up to full health again.
Yeah, but like I am used to that kind of mechanic on a phone game. I am not used to that kind of mechanic on, you know, a console.
Right.
You know, I have just been, you know, every hour or so I will just sit down and play a bunch of Pokemon Shuffle and then go find myself something else to do. So yeah, it's really fun. It's free. If you have a 3DS, definitely check it out. It's a lot of fun. I wish there was some kind of multiplayer function on it, but it's just a nice little solo puzzle game. Matt, what is your recommendation this week?
I don't think it'll come as a surprise to anyone, really, that I am recommending the new Kendrick Lamar album as my rec this week.
Oh, yeah. It's good.
It's called To Pimp a Butterfly, and my comment about it on Twitter was that Kendrick Lamar has made an amazing tribute album to the hip-hop of 2003, and that sounds like an insult. That sounds like I'm throwing shade at this Kendrick Lamar album. I am not, because let me tell you something. I, Matt D. Wilson, love almost more than anything else in this entire world, and that is the hip-hop of 2003.
Matt, how many birthday and Christmas presents have I gotten you that are about the hip-hop of 2003?
Yeah, exactly.
It's all of them.
Yeah.
It's literally all of them.
It is like, that is like the perfect snapshot, crystalline time of pop culture for me. And, it's not that this album is in any way derivative, per se. But just, like, as I go through it track by track, I'll hear the influences. Like, I'll be like, oh, Common. Oh, De La Soul. Talib Kweli. And, like, for me, that's amazing. Like, it's almost like Kendrick Lamar made this great album and also a puzzle for me to solve where I have to identify, like, who he was kind of, like, trying to pay homage to or, you know, be influenced by on this particular song. I think every song on the album is great. Every bit of it that I've listened to has been fantastic. It feels like an album I need to chew on a lot more. I've listened to it a few times now. I feel like I need to listen to it 100 times, like I did with every hip-hop album that I loved in 2003. If anybody gets the impression that I'm saying that I dislike this Kendrick Lamar album by comparing it to hip-hop from a little over a decade ago, boy, am I not doing that. I think it's like a return to hip-hop that I loved the most in a lot of ways.
Matt, can we both agree that where Gotham really went off the rails was not hiring Kendrick Lamar to be the Riddler?
Oh, man.
To challenge Commissioner Gordon with his hip-hop puzzles.
Like, now I'm just imagining Gotham as a show where, like, hip-hop artists from the past decade or 15 years are all the characters, and how much a million times better it would be if that was the case.
To be honest, I kind of feel like that's also the plot of Empire.
Yeah. I gotta watch Empire. I've not watched it. Have you watched Empire?
I watched one episode of Empire, which is not like I watched it and stopped watching it. I just happened to catch one episode.
I think Empire is something I'm definitely going to have to watch, because it sort of seems up my alley in a lot of ways. But anyway, I might wreck that later. For now, go get that Kendrick Lamar album. All right, those are our checks and wrecks. Chris, let's talk about some of the comics that came out this week.
It was a good week for comics.
Let's talk about what I think is probably the big release of the week, because there's been so much build to it. Multiversity has been pretty much a build to this comic from the beginning, and that is Ultra Comics number 1.
Now, I have written before about something that my friend Scott Simmons said about Crisis Infinite Earths, right? And how Crisis is the ultimate comic story because everything is in danger. The entire DC universe was in danger and came to an end. Like, they really did it. Like, they killed Supergirl. They put Golden Age Superman in a little box. And he has always said that the only way to top that is a comic that puts the reader in danger. And that is what Ultra Comics is.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, I love that it does that. I love that and again, if you have not read this, spoiler warning, feel free to skip ahead. I love that the way to fight the bad guy in this comic is that people make fun of it on the internet for being stupid. it is the most Grant Morrison comic, and it is the most Grant Morrison comic in a way where he is laughing and saying, like, yeah, this is the most Grant Morrison, this is the most me comic I can make. I think it's got some of Doug Monkey's best art. I think it makes a really interesting point about the nature of fiction and how fiction has evolved in from the transition from the 20th century to the 21st. Like, you know, the line about how, you know, it used to all be, you know, optimistic stories of the future, and now it's all apocalypses. Like, everything is post-apocalyptic. Like, that, because that's what we're fascinated by.
Yeah.
Really cool page tricks. Like, I love... There's a bit in Jackstaff, which, you know, I'm on record as that being my favorite superhero comic of all time, where the druid shows up and is talking to you, and every time you turn the page, it disrupts his link to the reader. Like, he's addressing you, breaking the fourth wall. And the way that this comic kind of does a similar mechanic where you are advised to stop turning the page if you want to save the world, but we as readers are unable or unwilling to do so. And there's a part where the gentry monster shows up and just says, you know, turn the page, slave.
That's Intellectron.
Intellectron, yeah. Like, that's really good. That's smart. That's smart stuff.
Yeah. I will say that somebody on Twitter, and I think it was Jess Nevins, compared it to there's a monster at the end of this book.
Yes.
Grover
yes.
book. And I kind of can't look at it in anything but that light now.
Which I think we can go on record in saying that is the best children's book ever.
Oh, it's great. I read it in a Werner Herzog voice not too long ago, and boy, it was amazing.
Like, that book, the Jackstaff stuff, and now this, like, they all really come together in a really cool way with this. And I really, really liked it. But I think I liked it more than you did. I think we talked about that a little bit.
I had a mixed reaction to it. Because in some ways, it's the most sophisticated multiversity issue, maybe Pax Americana notwithstanding. But in some ways, it's also the least sophisticated to me. Because this is the book that I think most obviously and clearly states the themes of multiversity, mm-hmm. particularly the theme of be careful about the ideas that you put into your head. Your mind should be, you know, your safe space, but people will just put anything into it. There's a part in here that is very similar to exactly the way Grant Morrison, you know, expressed all those themes to me when I interviewed him a couple months ago. Where it's basically just like, you know, people will protect their positions in a lockbox. People will secure their computer files with antivirus software, but they'll just put anything into their heads, which I think is like a really interesting thematic through line for this series. Mm-hmm. But there's something that's almost disappointing to me about it being just outwardly stated in here. The other thing I think is that this particular issue was built up so much. Like, this comic book, you know, caused characters in previous issues to commit suicide. It caused, you know, it made Captain Atom leave the universe in Pax Americana. Like, it drove characters to do things. It drove characters to become self-aware, like aware of their own fictionality, right? Mm-hmm. And look, I'm not expecting... I don't want a comic to make me want to leave the universe, on the one hand. But on the other hand, like, you know, what this ultimately is just like a pretty interesting accomplishment in metafiction. It's not an actual, you know, it doesn't live up to the hype because it's impossible to live up to the hype that was mm-hmm. built up for this particular comic book. So I like it's weird for me to express disappointment about that, I think. But at the same time, like there's a part of me that wants to like read this comic and then like something to happen, you know? Instead of just being like, oh, that was interesting, and then closing it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. If I can, like, you know, get a little fan theory on it. Did we see, like, interior pages from Ultra Comics in any of the other Multiversity books?
I think we only saw the cover.
Okay. Because I wonder if every universe has its own Ultra Comics, you know? Like, I wonder if this is the Ultra Comics for our universe. If we're gonna, you know...
I think if it was gonna show up anywhere, it would have been in Society of Superheroes, because that's where Ultra Comics kind of got, like, the most of a showcase.
Mm-hmm.
I'm flipping through. Oh, there it is. Yeah, it's just the cover.
Okay.
There is that great scene where Dr. Fate goes, "Put that book down right now, Mr. Pratt!"
I enjoyed this. I think it's... I would really like to see a Ultra Comics ongoing.
Oh, it would be impossible to sustain.
Oh, I know, but I would kind of love to see them try.
I think on its own, this issue is fine and very good. I just think it's a victim of its own build-up in the previous issues in a lot of ways. All right, let's talk about the next comic we're going to talk about, Batgirl number 40.
Yeah, this is the last issue of the first arc of the New Direction of Batgirl, and I really, really loved it. There's also a Batgirl Endgame special that's out this week that's really interesting because it's a silent issue. It's a dialogue-free issue, and those are always fun as someone who owns a $20 hardcover of just G.I. Joe 21. I enjoy a silent issue. But this little piece of the main series by Cameron Stewart, Brendan Fletcher, Babstar, kind of wraps everything up, and it ties everything in. And you find out that what has been going on in Batgirl's life is that when she, just after she had been shot by the Joker and paralyzed, she created an algorithm that would predict crime and determine who was most likely to commit crimes and where it would happen so that she could direct, you know, superheroes to it, to deal with it. And that the final piece of that algorithm was her brain scan. And so the algorithm is sentient, but it's a version of Barbara Gordon from when she is at a low point in her life. It is her darkest self that is now trying to destroy all crime in Gotham City. And that's a really, really interesting premise. I like the way it's played out on the cover of, you see the new 52 Batgirl kind of overlaid against the redesigned Batgirl. I like the way it plays out. Betty Fellon and Jordan Gibson show up in this issue. They're in two comics this week, by the way. They're in a Marvel book and a DC book. It's really interesting, especially when it starts to break down. Like, all of the people who would be committing crimes in this area are kind of gathered in one place because the algorithm has been, like, manipulating their Facebook stuff. And you see, like, what they're going to do. And some of it is, like, you know, this person is going to commit a crime, but some of it is like, this person is going to sign over her lease to someone else who is going to invite his cousin to move in from Coast City, and then the cousin is going to rob a bank. So it's all these people who are just kind of incidentally in this chain of causality that's going to cause crime. And that's really cool. Like, it's a really cool idea. It's done well. It ties in everything that has happened to Batgirl since the New Direction. It's really, really interesting. It's really, really well constructed. And honestly, I think it's my favorite issue of the series since the reboot. And you know, there's a lot of good stuff in there. I especially like that there's a bit at the end where they're like, "Yeah, oh yeah, we also came up with a name for the algorithm." And they don't get a chance to say what the name is, but it's very obviously Oracle.
Right.
So it's Batgirl creating Oracle, and in a way it's Batgirl versus Oracle, which is a really cool thing. Like, again, it's a really clever idea, and like, I would be shocked if this was not part of the, you know, part of the pitch. Like, if this was not the hook that they went in with and said, okay, we're not just going to redesign the costume. This is the actual story element. And it's really, really smart. I really love this book.
The last comic that we're going to talk about is The Black Hood number 2 from the new Archie, kind of, I guess you would call it mature 18 plus superhero line, Dark Circle.
Some of it is and some of it isn't, because Black Hood most definitely is, but like the Fox, I don't really, like, if it's going to be anything like the first Fox series, like, I don't think it is.
It's still Mark Waid and Dean Haspiel, so seemingly it's going to be much lighter fare than this. It's interesting, though. The Black Hood is a really interesting thing. On the one hand, just because of the risks it takes for a book being published by Archie Comics. Like, the word fuck is in here. And it is like a gritty crime comic about a heroin addict cop who goes out and fights crime at night. Half his face is extremely scarred up. And then he gets framed for drug running at the end of this particular issue. In some ways, I feel like this book, the first two issues of this book, like I think the jury is still out for me on it. I think that's how I am with a lot of Dwayne Swierczynski stuff. Like, some of it's a slow burn that you have to come around to. That's sort of how I was with his run on Bloodshot. But in a weird way, and it's partially because of the writing, and it's partially because of Michael Gatiss's art, it really feels to me like this is the comics version of the cutscenes in a Max Payne game. It's got that kind of like hard-boiled noir narration, and then Michael Gatiss's art is that kind of like, you know, kind of that like crime comic look from the 2000s, like what he did on Alias, sort of that Michael Lark, what was the Daredevil artist guy's name?
Alex Maleev.
Alex Maleev, yeah. It's sort of that style of art. Here's an example caption set of captions from this issue. Meanwhile, my partner, Devin Allen, knew something was up. He may not have known all the details, but he wasn't stupid. Dev did what any good cop would do. He worked the edges, seeing if it'd shake anything loose. Unless he caught me in the act of snorting a giant pile of horse, what was he gonna do? And it sounds like I'm making fun of that. I kind of love that. Like, I'm kind of a sucker for that hard-boiled cop narration dialogue. But at the same time, it feels like Max Payne, the comic. Max Payne, the superhero, the comic. So I'm not sure totally how I feel about the Black Hood, but I'm a sucker for this kind of crime book. So I will probably be sticking with it for the foreseeable future. Or until I can totally make a full assessment of how I feel about the Black Hood. But at the very least, you've got to give Archie credit for taking some major risks for Archie Comics, which is what they've been doing for the past several years. Of just like, wait, Archie's doing that? Really? Archie? So good on them for that, at the very least. All right, that's our comics segment. Chris, we need to get to our interview with Carla Pacheco.
Yes, and like I said, you might want to just go dig a hole and go get in your hole for a little bit when you listen to this interview. There are words in this interview that have never been on this podcast and likely never will again.
So whether that's a warning or an enticement, here is our interview with Carla.
Joining us for this week's program is a friend of ours, Matt. It's someone that we've known for a long time,
Very long time.
Very long
way back.
Time.
Yeah, actually. Well,
and you, much longer than me.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, because I only know Matt as MW.
Oh, man.
Back from the jpinkerton.com forum.
Matt, have you considered bringing MW back so you'll stop getting confused with the colorist?
It lives on only somewhat in my Twitter handle, high-minded MW.
Your Twitter handle that's all about how
much... Yeah, you still have the...
it's all about how much weed I smoke, according to how many followers I get that are weed-related accounts.
Carla Pacheco is our guest.
Hey!
You will know her as the writer of, what is the actual title of Inspector Pancakes? Inspector Pancakes helps the President of France solve the White Orchid murders?
That would be the exact title, yes.
And most recently, the writer of Dreadful Sirens, a new comic.
Dreadful Sirens, which is a naked titty pirate comic, I guess is how I've been describing it mostly.
That's usually what genre it gets filed under.
Naked titty pirates that are very misandrist, apparently.
When it eventually finds its spot in the Library of Congress, it'll be put in the titty pirate section of the Library of Congress.
Yeah.
And we should say the artist of Inspector Pancakes is Marin Marmula. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes. Yep, Marin Marmula. And then there's also pinups that I got from Jeff Jacks, Kate Leth, Leah Wethington, Becky Drystadt, and Heather Campbell and Jay Pinkerton helped a little bit on that
and
one as well.
And Anthony Clark, the creator.
And Anthony Clark. Anthony, yes. Anthony, he did a very, very cute one. So it's a... it was fun. I'd given all of the pinup artists my original copy of the book. I'd made a little draw your own version because I didn't have an illustrator on it yet. And so I'd made these little draw your own Inspector Pancakes books that just had the text with a big blank space. So I'd given one of those to all of the people I asked to do pinups on the books and asked them to just come up with their own interpretation of Inspector Pancakes. So that was actually a lot of fun just seeing what everyone came up with on their own. Jeff Jacks came up with a picture of my dog's dick, so that was fantastic as well.
Now,
and for people paid money for this. Like, they gave you money for this.
Like, 1,500 of them did.
Now, for listeners who have not had the pleasure of seeing the wonderful Inspector Pancakes Kickstarter video... And are not familiar with what Inspector Pancakes is all about. Carla, how would you describe that quote unquote children's book?
it's usually children's book with really big quotes. It is a children's book with a beautifully illustrated by Marin. Gorgeous, gorgeous illustrations, and a large print story about Inspector Pancakes, who is a little dog who every day he flies to France to help the president solve crimes, as you do. And so that's a perfectly legitimate of sorts story for children, even though it probably doesn't teach them much about France. And then in the it teaches them that the president of France gets really weepy if he loses his croissant, which is a valuable lesson. So there's a large print story that's for children, and then a fine print story that's a hard-boiled noir detective story about ladies of the evening being horribly murdered. Because that's kind of the thing I do, I guess. So we had a Kickstarter for it in January, and way too many people bought it. And so they'll all be getting really lovely what appears to be children's books until you open them up. The digital version is out now, as is the audiobook that I made because we'd hit, I think, the $20,000 push goal or something, so I had to make an audiobook. And I did.
Now, the character of Inspector Pancakes is, by my understanding, based on one of your actual dogs.
Yes, that is based on Edison. The original name of Inspector Pancakes was Eddie Spaghetti, who was a high-powered attorney who flew to France every day to help the president solve crime. I don't know if you give your cat, Matt, like any sort of jobs or job descriptions, or if that's just an exclusively Pachinkerton household thing. But you know, the dogs have jobs and backstories that we've made up for them. Whenever Edison would, everyone does this, right?
Well, I'll tell you, Harrison the cat, my cat, my wife and I have simply, we think that he is a Randian objectivist. So we constantly assign to him the philosophy of thinking that everyone in the world is a moocher, despite him doing no work and doing nothing.
That actually is a pretty cat philosophy, it seems like. I think probably most cats are and Randian. All cats are libertarians.
Fair.
But yes, I mean, so Edison was Eddie Spaghetti, who anytime he walked into the room, we'd just go like, Eddie Spaghetti, did you just get back from France? Were you helping the president solve crimes? And then one day it just went to a really dark place, and the book was born.
one of your Kickstarter, you had a number of interesting Kickstarter rewards, one of which involved a barbecue with the dogs.
Yes.
Figure that probably hasn't happened yet. The Kickstarter finished not that long ago.
We just finished the Kickstarter. We just got we've got the digital books and the audiobooks out to all the backers. If you're listening to this and you backed the book and you didn't get your email, go check the Kickstarter and check your email. So that's all out. And then we've got the book. We're waiting back on final proofs from the printers. They will slowly make their way overseas to Massachusetts, where the fine people at Make That Thing will then ship them all out to everyone. And I think at that point is probably where some of the more esoteric rewards, such as story time with Inspector Pancakes, will probably go out, because people asked me to read the book to them, or I offered to, and then they bought it, which I was surprised. And then, yes, the barbecue with Inspector Pancakes, since the person who bought that, and I actually emailed him and said, like, you don't have to do this. Like, please, like, thank you, but you really don't have to do this. I don't want anyone, you know, I don't want anyone having a financial hardship to support the book. So, but he assured me he wanted to. So I believe I will probably be sending him a barbecue in a box. And then the next time I'm on the East Coast, which I believe will be at SPX in Maryland in September, I will take him out for a nice reward dinner, him and a friend, in a public place, you know, because,
Are you at least going to have a framed picture of Edison to put on the table so that he's there in spirit?
I was going to, like, clip off a little of his hair and, like, vacuum seal a hot dog. I figured that'd be sufficient. Well, I mean, like, also the person who bought it will also get their own drive jacket. Their own drive jacket is part of that reward as well. So, yeah, I don't know, dude. Like, I just make shit up.
Girl, how did you make more money on your Kickstarter than we did? Since this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of in my life.
Titties. I mean, I assume titties. Titties kind of seems to be the key of everything.
Well, speaking of, I think that will lead us to talk about Dreadful Sirens a little bit.
Yes, Dreadful Sirens, which I'm doing with the exceptional Steve LeCouliard. We're really excited about that. We've both been working on it for a while now. I think we started back in November. We got a lot of big plans. We'll see if we can get them all together. But, you know, we've got a definite direction. We want to be taking the story, and we're excited about it because it's just a lot of naked lady pirates from history. It's educational that, you know, we're just going to make do horrible, violent things to everyone. So I basically, so I should at least say it. I should say, so Dreadful Sirens is based on actual lady pirates, Anne Bonny and Mary Read, and their compatriot, Calico Jack. Early on with Steve, I told him that we're pretty much just going to ignore all the parts of history that I don't like, you know, them dying or, you know, being executed and that type of stuff. So
they're reasonably horrible deaths.
Yeah, so my exact words to Steve were, so our pirates are going to be immortal, they're going to live forever, and they're going to fuck everything. So that's basically been the where we're going with that. Like I said, very educational.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've talked about on the show before, Matt and I, that I am an extremely mild history buff. Like, I really enjoy reading about history and learning about history. And Bonnie and Mary Read are two of my favorite historical figures.
Right. And so you loved the book?
I actually did. I actually did really love the book a lot.
Thank you.
Look, I paid money for it, Carla. You know.
Oh, shit, son. Wow. Well, now I do feel impressed. Thank you. I'm curious as to, I mean, it's been very nice, the response to it. We got a nice article in Comics Alliance that I didn't know was going up. That was pretty cool. It's kind of weird because this is all kind of feeling pretty recent for me as far as getting back into writing on a regular basis and a more professional basis. So there's been a lot of really good response in a very short amount of time, and it's pretty overwhelming. I'm getting ready. As soon as we're done, I will be throwing the last of my dirty laundry into a suitcase and heading over to Emerald City, and then I get to go woo a whole bunch of other people to let me write stuff for them.
That's one of the things that's really interesting to me, because in the time that we've known each other, I have known you as a humorist. Like, you kind of come from the same... Sure. background as me and Matt writing humor.
Of Jay Pinkerton giving us jobs.
Exactly. Exactly. there's a lot of Jay Pinkerton was here.
Jay's done a lot for all of us. So
he's a good guy and a friend of the show.
He is.
I can see Inspector Pancakes, like, kind of coming out of that, because Inspector Pancakes is, I mean, like you said, the illustrations are genuinely absolutely beautiful.
So much prettier than that book deserves to be.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie. Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
No, it's beautiful, and you have comics artists contributing to it, but at its heart, it is a long form comedy piece. Like, the joke.
Yeah.
Is in the horrible, horrible fine print.
Yeah, the joke is obviously, it's the disconnect of going for the maximum disconnect between the beauty of the illustrations and the tweeness and sweetness of little Inspector Pancakes just wanting to help everyone to, I don't know nothing about how them hookers got their cunnies slashed up, which is not a line you usually find in a children's book.
Do we? But is there a way we can get a more than explicit tag for this episode?
Well, I was pretty we were talking earlier my first question to you is, how much can I cuss? Like,
I shouldn't have. Said as much as you want. I should have put a cap on.
Yeah, you fucked up, son. Yeah, I was also saying, like, it reminded me I've got to go get my walnut fucker necklace out before I head over to Emerald City. Because I had a necklace made. It's gorgeous.
Oh, we're gonna take a few moments later on in the interview to talk about your purchasing history.
that necklace is Inspector Pancakes in micro. Like, it's a pretty necklace that a kid might look at.
Something beautiful that says something horrible.
Right.
Which is also me in micro.
Dreadful Sirens, on the other hand, like, it's very funny. There are a lot of, if people have not read it, they can find it. It's going up as a webcomic on Tumblr, correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is. You can just go to dreadfulsirens.com, and I've currently it as a Tumblr interface, because you can also just get the entire first chapter, kind of the intro chapter, and it's really brief, as a pay what you want on Gumroad. And so you can just download all of that and check it out if you want to see the whole thing. It's pay what you want. A lot of people have been paying way more than I feel they should. It's making me feel guilty, but you know, a buck or two if you want. Otherwise, just, you know, I'm just happy having people read it, you know, read it for free. Go ahead.
Yeah, like I said, there's a lot of really great jokes in it. I think it's the second page when Anne and Mary are going into the tavern and they're like, yeah, we're trying to find the crew of the Revenge because we know they just came back. So, you know, give us the information on where they are. And then like 20 dudes kick in the door and one goes, oh my God, we have so much fucking money. Like, that I think sets the tone for it. But it is as funny as it is, like it's a comic, you know, it's not a,
I mean, that's totally, Steve elevating my filth, to something really, really great. Steve is actually, he's a storyboard artist in Vancouver. And, so that he actually has an incredible amount of, he has a really, really good grasp of being able to kind of like take a rough outline. Cause whenever I'm working with an artist, I kind of ask, like, I have a questionnaire that I'll send them and ask, how do they want to work with me? Like, do you want a really detailed script? Do you want page by page? Do you want panel by panel? Do you want just a loose outline? And then you can kind of figure out your own story beats. And then I'll come back through and, you know, kind of more Marvel style. So we worked pretty Marvel style on that. And he's got just an amazing visual storytelling angle. And it was a real pleasure to work with him. So he brought quite a bit to the story.
It is beautiful.
With like just a beautiful way of coloring it. It's just pencils. Like there's no inks. It's all pencils with the color behind it. Kind of a lot of I hesitate to even say monochromatic because there's so much more light to it, and that doesn't do it justice, but you get just this kind of gorgeous, like light filled watercolor effect with full penetration.
Well, for running the risk of, you know, comparing this to something else, when maybe that's not the intent, and sometimes artists don't want to hear that. Like this book sort of has like this interesting, like almost like smutty LucasArts feel to it. Like there's some Monkey Island.
I felt like it was almost like a border. Yeah. It's a very Monkey Island feel. And I think that's probably just as much from the comedy and kind of some of the character design. I know a lot of it, Steve was specifically, he did specific homages, like with the cover is actually based off actual pirate, you know, artwork from like the 50s. A lot of like the colors and style was taken off of like some French comics that I wasn't really familiar with, but it looked really cool, so I didn't care.
Now, were those comics Inspector Pancakes brought back from?
Yeah. It's what Inspector Pancakes smuggled back from France, but along with all the dead prostitutes. But yeah, so Steve brought a lot. All those pages, there's just so much energy on the page. Yeah, I feel incredibly lucky. I put in the sound effects and the smutty language and all that stuff, but all the visual storytelling, like Steve just really knocked that out of the park, and I feel very, very lucky to be working with him. So that's been nice. And we'll actually, I'll be seeing him tomorrow night over at Emerald City, so we can start figuring out how the hell we top that one.
Well, the thing that I was going to say, like in terms of a comparison, is that it really reminds me of Phil Folio's Xenophile. Like,
yeah.
And I think a lot of that has to do with, as you said, there is full penetration in this comic.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, even if you're, even if you only know Folio from his non-pornographic work, like if you only know like Girl Genius or something, there's a lot of that kind of expressiveness in character design, and particularly Anne and Mary. I really like it a lot.
Yeah, I also liked how and some of the character sketches for characters that we'll be introducing later. I like that Steve does a lot with different body types and. Like you get the personality of each character. Like, some artists, you've got five characters on the screen and on the page. And if their hair color wasn't different, you wouldn't really tell who was who. And Steve just brings so much personality to each character, and the body language and the facial expressions. And it's just, you know, it's some really, really fun work. I'm really excited about keeping it going and building up some more. And, you know, I'm having a hell of a time playing in the world because, again, we're kind of ignoring history, which historians have done that for years. So I don't really feel too bad about it. But our version of the Caribbean is non-conventional, to say the least.
Are there other historical figures that are going to show up? Like, are there any other favorites I can walk out?
There's going to be some definite other pirates, other lady pirates, other pirates from history, and also from, like, completely different wrong centuries of history, because, again, as I said, fuck it. Everyone lives forever and they fuck everything. So we're going to have some more history that pops in. There's actually some little inside jokes that I pepper all of my shit with. So like, if you look in the ad pages or any of the back matter and introductions, there's little hints of things to come. But that's partially just because I like doing that as little private jokes for myself. And I'm not going to tell you what any of them are. You just have to figure it out for yourself. Because <Well, that's, laughs> I'm a dick.
That's part of the mystique. Talking about the character designs, like the way that Anne and Mary look in this, like they almost have that look of like a comedy team. Like they're so distinct from one another.
Yeah.
Anne is all curves and Mary's all angles.
And Mary is like super lanky, yeah.
Yeah, it is a very Abbott and Costello thing with tits, but it's in violence, real violence. I mean, that's the thing, is they each have a very, like, you know, we went through and had a very set, you know, rules of what, you know, because it would be very easy to make both of them just complete psychopaths. And they obviously are.
Oh, yeah. Mary stabs him. Like, it is one of the most violent murders I've seen in a comic. Mary just keeps on stabbing dudes in the face with broken bottles. It's horrifying.
Well, you mentioned the sound effects. And, like, at that point, Mary is killing people so viciously that the sound effects are just commenting on the violence.
Right, yeah. I think that's probably the most Carla element of it, if I could say so. You know, I mean, that's pretty much, I guess, like more of my flavor of comedy, of kind of having that. Like, I mean, I don't ever want it to necessarily be like, you know, I'm not trying to break the fourth wall, but, you know, we're having fun with it. And, you know, you're kind of, you know, at some point, like, holy shit, this is horrific violence. I feel like the sound effects that I've been doing are kind of a way to both accentuate and lighten the mood of that, I guess. I was pretty proud of the Dick Fury one. That made me laugh. That's the key at the end of the day. All of this is just shit that makes me laugh, and I really don't care what the rest of you think. It's all for Carla and for Steve, but mostly it's the motivation behind anything I do, including, as we were discussing earlier, any of those purchases I make are basically just, well, it made me laugh at the time. Okay, so
we'll talk about those now, and then I think that's okay. That'll take us into Twitter questions. Carla, I don't know where to begin with this. Was the hoodie footy pajamas, was that the first weird one?
Yeah, I think the Twacos hoodie footy. Well, I mean, you were a part of Twacos, Chris.
I was not a part of that. You can't pin that one on me.
You're tangentially involved.
I was involved in that. You said Twacos and I was repulsed.
So one day on Twitter, God, that must have been how many years ago, I decided to just start talking in baby talk because I knew it would piss everyone off. And so, yes, I was asking for everybody to bring me Twackles. And which I don't understand is, why. Why would you bring me Twackles?
There's not even a letter in that. You're putting a letter in it to make it worse.
Yes, that's basically anything I can do to make anything worse. That's the Carlo Pacheco personal brand. But yeah, so I made a ridiculous little comic about a little photo comic involving you and Franz Ferdinand. I don't know if he wants his full name, Ben, used on this. but yeah, so I just made a ridiculous little cartoon about Twackles, and then I just started doing it to piss everybody off. And then at some point I got really into pajama jeans and really wanting a pair of pajama jeans. And so I decided to double down and go with the full body hoodie footy that was made out of pajama jean material. And then I had it monogrammed with Twackles.
Matt, I hope you wrote down, at some point I got really into pajama jeans.
Here's the deal. Jay wouldn't buy them for me. For like 2 years, he refused to buy me pajama jeans. Because, and I quote, "I'm not buying you anything. I'm going to have to cut you out of eventually." It just became this holy grail of comfort for me. And it was all I wanted. And then actually a Twitter friend, Millipone on Twitter, actually bought them for me, the first pair of pajama jeans. And then I eventually made Jay buy me the full hoodie footy all-in-one adult onesie pajama jeans. So
it's somehow even more upsetting to me that you didn't even buy it yourself.
No, that was part of the thing. I refused to buy it myself. That would have not made the joke as good. It was me insisting on someone else purchasing this horrible, horrible product for me. I'm trying to think, because that's probably the most outrageous one, right? I mean, other than the walnut fucker necklace, I guess the butt pugs. There's the butt pugs.
I don't even think I know about that.
Oh, so Jenny Sparks on Twitter, Sparky Robot, has a 3D printer.
And oh my god. I already want out of this story.
So anyway, well, I mean, I can send you pictures that you can put up with this so that
no.
people can get full appeal. But so I had come up with the line of, wouldn't it be great if you made a butt pug? By which I meant, you know, a butt plug that had a pug dog on it as the face. And lovely, perfect, wonderful Jenny that she is made that happen for me. So I have actually on my desk in my office, I have a vase full of butt pugs. And they're bright purple and they glow under black light. So, I mean, I haven't tried that, but I've been informed that they do. And it's a very grumpy looking little pug. I think I'm really going to have to give you pictures so you can show people. Like, it only seems fair. Because people are going to be dying of curiosity about the butt pugs.
I can link to a picture in the show notes. With warnings.
Don't deny your fans the beauty of the butt pug. That's when dreams come true. When fantasies become 3D realities. When someone takes a horrible, horrible idea I had and makes it a real thing, which apparently is just a running theme of my professional career now. So that's been pretty cool.
I think the thing that's getting to me the most is that you exist in a time of 3D printers.
The worst part is I recently bought a little vending machine, like one that I could take to cons. It's like one of those little ones with the little plastic balls, you know, that you have like little prizes or a ring or whatever, a little toy inside. So I bought it off Chris Yates, the guy who makes all the really cool puzzles and the comics at ReaperGraphics.com. And so I bought that off him. So I now have a little vending machine that I can just fill with my ideas. That's probably going to end badly.
That's Carla.
Up front.
That right there, Carla, is the true beauty of creation. That's Carla, I just want to tell you this. I want to give a quick little review of Dreadful Sirens to you on the show.
Oh.
You've got the 18-plus warning on the cover, much like Vertigo comics of the 90s and 2000s had for mature readers on the cover. I never really thought for mature readers really lived up to the promise of for mature readers for like 16-year-old Matt. Dreadful Sirens lives up to 18-plus and then some.
Yeah, it's actually, I think at one point I was thinking about putting like 57 or something.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm 32, and I feel like I could use a few more years before I read
the show. No one is ready.
So
the worst part, and this, again, we'll get to the questions, I know, but the worst part about all of this stuff that I make, and the Twacos, or Dreadful Sirens, or Inspector Pancakes, is in my mind, and this is the thing that should terrify you all, this is perfectly normal, and everyone is just okay with it. It's just like in my head, it's just like, oh, yeah, of course they'll do a pirate comic that has, you know, people having sex right in your face. You know, it's like, of course I'll write a children's book about, you know, murders, really bad murders. You know, like in my mind, that's just perfectly normal. And I'm not trying to be quirky. So that's probably what should be more scary for all of us, I guess, than anything. But Dreadful Sirens, definitely over 18 minimum, like 21 even. I don't know. I felt like I probably needed to put an even bigger label on it, but also at some point I just stopped caring. So
it lives up. I'll just tell you, it lives up to that promise. All right,
it was in the bag at the comic bookstore.
All right, here's how people can ask questions on Twitter.
Yes.
All you have to do is shrink yourself down, put yourself in a little plastic egg, get in a vending machine, have Carla take you to a convention, have somebody twist a little lever on the machine at that convention, and then you pop out in the little egg, and people are like, Carla, how dare you? And then you pop out of that little egg, you run away, you start an account on Twitter.com, you wait until Thursday night, at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. That's 6:30 Pacific. And at that time, we will put out the call for questions, and you can ask a question of our listeners, like the ones you're about to hear that I'm about to ask right now. The first one I have here is from Coltreg on Twitter, who wants to know, Carla Pacheco, what is the best type of pie?
See, the problem with being me is I never know if someone's just assuming I'm going to give, like, a really dirty answer. Like, you know, well, obviously hair or, you know, hot clam pie or whatever. But coconut cream.
coconut cream is a good choice.
Sometimes cherry, but, you know. I mean, see, all of this sounds filthy when I say it. All pie is good.
I go in for the French silk. French silk is a good pie.
Oh, a luxurious, fancy man.
Oh, yes. That's me in every way.
Yes.
Apple is my fave.
Chris is a true American.
Basically, Chris is just like vanilla missionary apple.
Okay, listen. Vanilla is a delicious flavor.
Yeah, I will go to bat for vanilla forever.
Lots of people like it, and nothing more.
All right, the next question we've got is from Tales to Enrage. He says it's for all of us. He says, what is the melee weapon you'd most like to own but can't bring yourself to buy?
Probably buy anything I really wanted. Just, it's not a matter of...
Purchase it for you.
Or get Jay to purchase it for me. Buy. Yeah, it's not even that I can't bring myself to buy stuff. It's just that, like, it doesn't exist. Like, I can't get my actual dragon bone warhammer that I made in Skyrim by using the restoration potion loop. Some of you nerds will know what that means. But I created this warhammer that if you touched someone with it, they would fall down dead. It was like 500 million death points or whatever. And so I just grinded for days just to get all my enchanting and my smithing all the way up so I could make this Warhammer. And so that's what I would want, but that doesn't exist in the material world. I mean, sure, cosplayers could make me a knockoff, but I want one that actually does that. So it's not a matter of I can't bring myself to it. It doesn't exist.
It's weird because I don't recall Matt asking, hey, what would be the worst idea in the world?
I mean, to be fair, like, chainsaws exist, and I'm not allowed to have one of those either because Jay won't buy it for me. But
I did, like, about a month ago, I did look at Amazon reviews for Bowie knives for, like, 2 hours. Oh. And if you, like, if you've never been on Knife Amazon.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Knife Amazon is amazing.
Knife Amazon is something else.
I was reading Knife Reviews.
Not as good as Drive Jacket Amazon is actually even better than Knife Amazon. I highly recommend Drive Jacket Amazon. That is a motherfucking treat.
Here's the thing about Knife Amazon is that there were so many reviews that began with, I got this knife for my wife as a present, and she loves it.
So it's the gender reverse of Tommy Bahama Amazon?
Or like those cooking websites. Hubby loved it!
Yeah.
Matt, what is your melee weapon?
A katana from Chinatown. I've expressed this on the show before. I know I have. I every time I go to Chinatown, I want to buy a sword. And I just
what if we just, like, when's the anniversary of the show? Like, it's like in August, right?
Yeah.
Like, what if we celebrated the anniversary?
You guys are gonna have your knife anniversary, you know, instead of, like, your silver gold knife.
Look, Matt and I live close enough together.
Exchange of katanas.
Matt and I live close enough to each other that we could just drive towards each other's houses and meet at a flea market.
But what if there's only one really good katana? Who gets it?
Christmas.
You have to choose which of you is going to make the sacrifice here.
I get the katana. Chris gets the Bowie knife. I think we've determined.
No, there's a Kabowie knife. It's everything each of you have ever wanted, and there's only one. What do you do?
I think we've got to fight to the death at that point.
I would rather not.
All right. The next question is from Charlotte of Oz, and Charlotte, as usual, is getting into touchy territory. Charlotte wants to know, got any good stories from the JP forums that you're not legally barred from sharing? We did a lot of fun Photoshops on there, Carla. I remember that.
Photoshops were good times. It was a pretty low-key forum, really. Like, I don't think we ever really got into there weren't really flame wars that I remember.
No, it was mostly just like...
We'd give each other shit, but...
Oh, sure. It was mostly just like talking about comics, talking about movies and stuff, and making dumb Photoshops.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty much it. Like, it was basically, I mean, we'd all be kind of trying to outdo each other for who could make the best / worst, Photoshop. But yeah, I still remember fondly the Old West, huge group Photoshop. Like, I wish that's got to exist somewhere, right? Like,
I think almost all of my Photoshops from those days are lost to time forever, which is sad.
I still wish I had my one, which was a remake of the Star Wars poster that was just, the Death Star was full of puppies, you bastard.
All right. Mike Sterling has asked, what is the worst thing Carla has ever eaten?
Like, you want names?
Well, I guess we should explain that Carla loves to tweet about her adventures and trips to chain restaurants.
It's the worst fucking restaurants. Like, I am pure Midwest trash, and that will never, ever change. I mean, I live in the place where you literally get the best seafood in the world, and I will go to Red Lobster, A, because I think it's funny, B, Cheddar Bay biscuits, and C, those shitty snow crab legs look really funny when I take a selfie with them hanging out of my mouth, as is my wont. As far as like worst thing I've ever eaten. Yeah. Oh, it was actually, so it was a drink actually, technically sort of food related. I had a big bottle of gin. A lot of stories start this way. But I didn't have anything to mix it with, but I did have a big jar of pickle juice. So I invented what I named the dilettante, which is gin and pickle juice. And I really love both of those things. The dilettante is quite possibly the worst thing I ever made. and I'm putting that ahead of Inspector Pancakes or Dreadful Sirens or any of the other really terrible comics that I have planned in my future. But yeah, the dilettante sucks ass. Like, it was fucking foul. I drank it anyway because gin, but yeah, don't mix pickle juice with gin. Which is weird because I love dirty martinis and that's olive juice. I don't know why it didn't work, but I'm still bad because it was a cute name too. I'm like, dilettante? That's fucking brilliant.
It is good.
Anyway, so
but everybody,
so dilettante, that's the worst.
Everybody listening to this learned something tonight. Yeah. That Preston Doe or Preston Do, I'm not sure which. Wants to know, will Carla keep updating her blog with amazing posts like embarrassing J stories and Twitter screen recaps?
I haven't done that in a while. I keep meaning to, but I actually got busy writing stuff. I'm sure there will be additional, you know, scenes from a marriage from, you know, so Under the Wagon is my blog that I've had for probably 10 years now. So there's a lot of really terrible shit in the archives because it originally started as back when I was a DJ in Chicago and just very single and very drunk and very successful in all of my endeavors. But yeah, I'm you know, I've always got notes on different stuff. Like I've got a running tally of different scenes from a marriage, which are the embarrassing J stories, you know, different screen caps of just little jokes that I tend to make. A lot of those actually have ended up on Twitter. So I tend to, if it's something really quick, I tend to just put it on Twitter instead of putting it on my website because I'm really good at business like that. So I just give it away for free. There'll be more Under the Wagon stuff, definitely. By which I mean, I don't know.
This is the last, I think this is going to have to be the last one. Yeah. From Doubting
Tom. I gotta get to Emerald City, man.
You do.
You're drinking without me.
this is from Doubting Tom, who has a question for all of us. What is the most ridiculous, ill-advised piece of clothing you've ever worn by choice?
I mean, I know everyone's going to just pick the hoodie footy, but actually, I'll say for me, I was a goth in high school before that was actually like a cool thing to be. And I used to wear my mom's graduation robe, like her black college graduation robe. I wore it as a cloak over cut off jean shorts and black tights with hiking boots. So just imagine, I mean, you guys have seen me in real life. You know how small I am, correct? Like I am 4'10".
Yes.
My mom is 5'9". So imagine 4'10" Carla with this unzipped, you know, high school graduation gown billowing around me as I walk down the halls of Rock Island High School in Rock Island, Illinois. That'd probably be it. Chris, because I know you're not going to pick one of your wrestling shirts.
Oh, no. All my wrestling shirts are great. I wore a zoot suit to the prom one year.
Of course you did.
Complete with a sword cane.
Did you have the hat?
Yes, I had the hat. I had the hat, the chain, long coat, four-in-hand tie.
There you go.
I would say that is probably it.
What color was it? Did you go full baller and go white? Or like was it a white suit?
No. It was black with white trim. So
there you go.
I looked like I was going to a jazz funeral. There are pictures that exist, but I don't know where they are. I honestly don't know where they are, or I would probably post them.
Matt?
Okay, so I have a high school one and I have an adult one. My high school one was that one day I decided, because I wanted to be funny, I was going to wear a loud necktie to school, like just all day, but over a t-shirt, because I thought that was funny and cool, and it was the worst idea. Because like,
was it like one of those Warner Brother ties? Like, did it have the Roadrunner on it?
No, it was just like a lot of like bright colors. It may have had some kind of flowers on it, but I just got a lot of like, what the fuck's with that tie? Why are you wearing that tie? You some kind of weirdo? And what was called other names that I won't say.
Right.
And then as an adult, I bought this. I still have it. I would still wear it. But I made the terrible choice of buying this like very Western looking Western shirt, with like the shoulder trim and everything, like a cowboy shirt.
The pearl buttons.
Oh yeah,
the pearl buttons.
It's got it's got all that Western shirt trimmings, and I decided to take it with me on a trip to Las Vegas a few years ago, and I was just like walking around in Las Vegas on the Strip. And a guy who was panhandling for money, just like sitting on a stairway, like asked me for money, and I told him like, "Sorry, man, I don't have any change on me. I can't give you anything right now." And as I was walking away, he just shouted out, "That shirt looks terrible." so that's it. Okay, that's awesome. That's going to be it for our Twitter questions. Carla, it has been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so very, very much for having me on the show. I really do appreciate it.
Before we say our total goodbyes, please tell all our listeners where they can find you online.
All right. So the easiest catch-all is underthewagon.com. For the specific projects, there's inspectorpancakes.com and dreadfulsirens.com. And, of course, the Carla Pacheco on Twitter is where you get the most Carla, Carla all the time. I don't know if anyone's actually ready for that, but, you know. That's even more 18 plus than Dreadful Sirens is.
Well, Carla, thank you again. It's been great.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks once again to Carla Pacheco for joining us on the show tonight. But now it is time for our ongoing project for the year 2015, where Matt and I are creating a list of the top 100 comic book quotes of all time.
That's right. This is the Word Heavyweight Champion. And it is a segment where you send us lists of quotes from comic books, and then we put them in a top 100 list. This list comes from listener Kevin Maroney, who has some good ones for us. The first one is from Wildstorm Spotlight featuring Mr. Majestic number 1.
Interesting.
Written by Alan Moore. The quote is, "Love doesn't have a point. Love is the point."
That's a pretty good one.
That's a nice sentiment.
That is a nice sentiment. That's like I would get that tattooed on my side. Like on my ribs.
Where do you think it should land?
It's nice. Is it weird that that shows up in a Mr. Majestic comic by Alan Moore?
It is a little strange, yeah.
But those Alan Moore Wildstorm books are really good. I would say that goes... I think, like, just because of morality, I think we need to put that above Never Stop Making Them Pay.
I agree with that, yes.
But I would not put it. I would not put it above. You pursue me past your dying. The Ra's al Ghul line.
I think that is fair. That is where that goes.
Okay, let me type that in.
The next quote is from Flex Mentallo.
Okay.
And speaking of Grant Morrison-y comics, The quote is, only a bitter little adolescent boy could confuse realism for pessimism.
These are some life motto quotes.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think, Matt? Where would you put this on the list?
I mean, I would put it on the list. I don't know that it's super quotable.
Yeah, well, the thing is, that is the kind of bluntly stated version of the JLA Classified quote.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and I feel like the JLA Classified quote is a little bit better because it has jet-powered apes in it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes above, you know, search for your body on Jupiter. Or
The police wouldn't think to look for your body on Saturn.
On Saturn, right? Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not looking at the list. But I don't know that it goes too far above that.
Okay, well, right above that we have criminals are a superstitious, cowardly lot.
I don't think I would put it above that.
Okay, so read it back one more time while I type it in.
Only a bitter little adolescent boy would confuse realism for pessimism. The next one I think is very good. It's from the original Man-Thing series, written by Steve Gerber. Whatever knows fear burns.
Isn't it at the touch of the Man-Thing? Or is this just a general statement about things that know fear?
I guess it is at the touch of the Man-Thing, right?
Yeah.
That's not that full quote.
Yeah.
Look that up.
Guys, folks, they gotta be full quotes. Like, you can't just cut it off in the middle.
Well, okay, let's do whatever knows fear burns at the touch of the Man-Thing.
Okay. Again.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty great. Surely, I know this has had to happen, but they have done the Daredevil Man-Thing team-up comic, right?
I think so, yeah.
Where Daredevil's just, like, riding Man-Thing because he...
because,
like,
he has no fear.
Yeah, because he has no fear.
I think they have done that. I think that has happened. Like, where do you think that quote falls?
I think that goes just below Gaze into the Fist of Dread.
What's right below that?
The next wave quote about having two Uzis and a shovel.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good spot.
All right, those were three good quotes.
All right. The next list is from Aaron Rabaroff. And he's calling these tough guy quotes.
Oh, okay. I like some tough guy quotes.
The first one is spoken by Wolverine in Uncanny X-Men number 132. Okay, suckers.
Oh, yeah, I know this one. This is the most important panel in comics history.
You've taken your best shot. Now it's my turn.
It's my turn. That is a great quote.
Yeah.
A lot of that quote is great because of context. Like, I've talked about it before. Like, the reason that's the most important panel in comics is because up to that point, like, for the previous 40 issues, or, you know, what, 38 issues? Like, the X-Men were an ensemble book. Like, the most important X-Men was Cyclops in X-Men 94 to X-Men 132. After that issue comes out, it's basically Wolverine. Like, yeah. Wolverine is the guy now.
Yeah.
Because of that panel and the following issue, the Wolverine Lashes Out issue, which is so great. Like, that is one of the, like, that is one of the pins in, you can put in the timeline where, okay, Bronze Age is over. Now it's the modern age, or now it's whatever we call that age of comics.
Yeah. What's really interesting about that quote specifically is that it's a lot of cliches.
Yeah.
It's like three cliches smushed together.
It really is.
Does it go on the list? And two, as a quote devoid of context, like, obviously context plays a role, but I think as a quote devoid of context, it's not that great.
Well, the thing is, it's not just that it's the quote devoid of context, it's the quote devoid of that panel, which is arguably John Byrne's single best panel of his entire career.
Yeah.
Like, it is a good panel. It looks like it could come out today.
It really does. Like,
there's nothing dated about it. It is like I said, like that's okay. This is what comics are doing now. Like this is what comics will be doing for the next 15 years. Yeah, like the quote by itself is not great because like just, you know, I mean, it's perfect with that art and the art is perfect with that quote. But like, if you remove just the words, then they're not as good. They're not as good without the context. Like this more than any other quote on this list suffers from lack of context.
Yeah.
I would still probably put it on the list, but I would probably put it just as a quote. I would put it above Mogo Doesn't Socialize and below The Police Wouldn't Think to Look for Your Body on Saturn.
I think that's good. I think that's the spot. Next on Aaron's list is one we may not put on the list at all. It's from All-Star Batman and Robin number 2.
Nope.
I'm the goddamn Batman.
Nope, that doesn't go on the list. that is not one of the top 100 comic book quotes of all time.
Okay.
Like we have 22 of them on the list, and I can tell you that is not one of the top 100.
Fair enough. Okay, the last one is actually an exchange.
Okay.
From Luke Cage, Hero for Hire number 8. Dr. Doom. This is a sample of the pain my protective armor can inflict. Power Man, this is a sample of my fist.
Like, again, I feel like we've got that covered, like, with the dread quote. But now, here's my question. Are we taking this as both parts of that quote, like, as a dialogue exchange? Because we do not have any dialogue exchanges on here. They're all just...
I don't think we can use anything but just Luke Cage's "This is a sample of my fist."
I mean, that's still pretty good.
It's still a good quote.
Like, I worry that this list is just going to be quotes about punching people. Because right now, our number one is "It's clobbering time." Our number two is "You brought a you to a me fight."
Look,
we have like 5 more quotes on here about people punching each other.
I think that's a fairly representative. I think that's fairly representative of comics. You know, like,
I mean, yeah, I think you're right.
Like, what's the most quotable quote from Scott Pilgrim? It's about punching.
That's true.
In a comic that's not necessarily about punching. Well, it is about punching a lot. It is. But okay, so the Luke Cage quote, what do you think?
Okay, I don't think it's quite as good as Gaze into the Fist of Dread. Although it does predate it.
Yeah.
Which is worth talking about. But Gaze into the Fist of Dread is so perfect. But again, you know, that's one that's perfect in context, but also works really well outside, like just on its own.
Yeah.
I would say that, again, I don't think it's as good as "Are You Man or Fiend from Hell?"
So right below that, this is a sample of my fist?
I would say that goes above the Mr. Majestic quote about love.
I do too, as terrible as that sounds.
What is wrong with us?
This is a sample of my fist, Chris. All right, that is it for our Word Heavyweight Champion segment. For this week, if you would like to send us a list of comic book quotes, you can do that at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send us listener questions or whatever else you feel like to that email address. You can also send listener questions to our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. Be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That's where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Check us out on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you search for War Rocket Ajax, that's where you will find the show. If you like the show, leave us a review there. The more positive reviews we get, the more we are featured on iTunes. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson, and you will find links to all of my stuff. Chris, where can everybody find all your stuff?
Everybody can find everything that I do at about.me/ChrisSims. I'm kind of staying off social media for the next little bit, but feel free to follow if you want. But if you want links to the things I do, they are all there at about.me/ChrisSims. That's ChrisSims.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode of War Rocket Ajax. This has been War Rocket Ajax number 247. We appreciate everyone listening. We thank you. We are glad that you spent this brief time with us. Maybe not so brief to you. We will see you next week. Be good to each other, everybody.
Yeah! It's for every one of us. It's not for every one of us. It's time for the body, and every man, every woman, every child, every body flash. We learn everything to Flash. From this day on, as every breed of mongrel live together.